Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. It's 20 minutes past 12 on our fast fashion story. Someone's texted in to say that their friend has a label that makes bags, and you can find it at www.velvetheartbeat. So if you are more interested in looking into ethical sources for your fashion, it's a good idea. Justin, what have you got for us today?
Well, after a very messy week in Australian politics.
Crazy,
Yeah, very crazy.
To the point that they're asking if they can come, if Jacinda can go over to Australia.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter and just make my day. Well, back to the clip. Now, Malcolm Turnbull is being thrown out as Liberal Party leader and Prime Minister of Australia, and he's replaced by former Treasurer Scott Morrison. And what does that mean? And for that, I spoke to Dr. Peter Chin of the University of Sydney about what caused the leadership challenge and how it will affect Trans-Tasman relations. Then I'll speak to Dr. Jill Shepherd of the Australian National University to talk about how Scott Morrison's new government can affect refugee or climate change policies. Mm. And finally, I talked to Frank Bongiorno, also of the ANU, to talk about this, the last week's legacy on Australian political history. But first, I have asked Dr. Peter Chin to answer what the thing that's on our minds for the past week. What is going on?
Basically, the short story is that the ruling party, the Liberal Party of Australia, they have increasingly, over the last couple of decades, started to drift into two competing camps, really around the more traditional liberals who are associated with classical liberalism and modern conservatism, that is kind of similar to what we see coming out of the United States. And so internally they have a great deal of difficulties basically working together, and that has turned into a number of personality conflicts, and those personality conflicts have led to poor governmental performance. And because of poor governmental performance, the government's been polling very poorly, and that has precipitated the leadership transition that's occurred.
Now, Scott Morrison is the Prime Minister of Australia. Do you think he will have different policies on New Zealanders in Australia?
There's a possibility that might change. I think a really open question. I think there will be some moderation of that policy. But if New Zealanders are hoping for a complete reversal of Australia's policies with regards to both, New Zealand citizens have been convicted of crimes in Australia and their detention and deportation, but also the standing of New Zealand citizens in Australia with regards to, say, welfare and access to permanent residency and citizenship. I think it's unlikely there will be substantial changes. Those policies have a really long history in Australia, going back some decades now. And unfortunately for New Zealanders, that while there's actually a large number of New Zealanders living in Australia, they're an extremely large cultural group in Australia. Australians actually pay no attention at all to what goes on in New Zealand, nor really cares about New Zealand politics or the concerns of the New Zealand government. And to give you an illustration of that, 29%, almost a third of Australians, can't actually name New Zealand when asked to list countries in the region.
What are your thoughts on the Trans-Tasman relationship under Morrison?
Well, I think it's likely to continue relatively unchanged. The Trans-Tasman relationship is quite robust, it's strong, it's institutionalised in many ways. So if you think about all those Trans-Tasman governing institutions like standard-making body and various trade organisations and things like that, they are really tied into the kind of heart of the structure of the diplomatic relations between the two countries. Those things aren't going to change. And changes in Australian government and leadership don't substantially influence the Trans-Tasman relationship in many ways. Sometimes there are stronger and weaker relationships between the two countries. So, for example, John Key and Malcolm Turnbull had quite a close relationship. And that's partly because they were basically the same person, you know, sort of rich businessmen, white dudes kind of thing, like to wear a lot of suits. But that was sort of maybe a slightly higher watermark than the average relationship. And generally speaking, Australia and New Zealand see the world in similar ways. They have relatively highly integrated economies that are facilitated by a large set of standing governance arrangements. And the areas of disputation tend to be about the treatment of expatriate New Zealanders in Australia. And that really hasn't substantially changed in 20 years.
when Scott Morrison is immigration minister, he has a quite strong policy on immigration. Do you think under his administration, will this change for the good or the other way?
Yeah, look, I think Scott Morrison as Prime Minister probably won't be looking to change too much at the moment. So currently Australia has quite strict border control and immigration policies. I don't think there's any sign of that changing under the new leadership of the Australian government. What I think is interesting though about Scott Morrison is that even though he has been incredibly tough on immigration, particularly on asylum seekers who arrive by boat, he hasn't made that central to his political persona. So in a way, like someone like Peter Dutton talked a lot about how tough and strict he was on immigration, Scott Morrison sort of did it more quietly. So we might see a little bit of tinkering around the edge, but for the most part, I don't think much will change.
What about on climate change?
Scott Morrison will be more conservative than the previous Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, on issues like climate change. But what we saw and what was so important in bringing down Malcolm Turnbull's Prime Ministership is the majority of the current Liberal Party, even those on the backbench, don't think that we need to act on climate change, and so whoever is Prime Minister is going to be hamstrung by that majority opinion. So I don't think either way, even if Scott Morrison was particularly progressive on climate change, that we would see any difference there.
But will that have any effect on Australia's place in the Paris Climate Change Agreement?
Yeah, look, it wouldn't surprise me if Scott Morrison did move to withdraw Australia from the Paris Agreement on climate change. I think that is majority position of his parliamentary colleagues in the Liberal Party, and also Scott Morrison has been an unabashed supporter of the coal industry in Australia. And so what we're seeing from the Liberal Party at the moment, really interestingly, is not just people questioning, I guess, climate change science, but being really proactively supportive of the coal industry. And that's probably where the government will head under Scott Morrison, even further in favour of supporting coal-fired power stations.
What does this mean for Australian politics in the future?
Hopefully we'll see an end to this relatively constant turnover of prime ministers in Australia. The important thing to remember about the Australian political system is that underlying all of this personnel turnover, that we're really quite stable. There's relatively high rates of trust and satisfaction in Australian politics. These are on fairly rapid decline, but still, as we go internationally, Australia's political system is incredibly stable. So hopefully we'll put an end to this, but that remains to be seen. I think given how unpopular this particular leadership change is likely to be with the Australian people, and we've already seen opinion polls out this morning that suggest Australian voters are incredibly unhappy with the Liberal Party for doing this. Hopefully both major parties in future will see that this kind of behaviour is not without negative consequence, that voters will punish them. I also think what we'll see at the next election is the minor parties getting record high vote share. I think Australian voters are increasingly turned off both major parties. With our preferential voting system, votes tend to go back to the major parties anyway, so we probably won't see seats really change. Both of the major parties remain in pretty tight control of the government generally, but I think more people will give their first preference vote to minor party and independent candidates, and eventually the major parties are going to have to listen to that and probably fix their behaviour.
Why does this frequency exist in Australian politics?
There are a lot of theories about why it's happened. I think in the Australian case, the almost complete sovereignty of the parliamentary party, its capacity to make and break leaders, is a very powerful phenomenon. I mean, in most Anglo democracies now, I think party leaders, there are rules that to some extent insulate them from that kind of sort of internal parliamentary party overthrow, usually some form of rank and file selection, which Canada for some parties, or at least one of the political parties, goes all the way back to the First World War. This isn't the case in Australia, and it means that when things turn bad, or there's a perception that things are going bad for a political leader, usually via opinion polling, which in itself has become much more frequent over the last 20 or 25 years, parliamentary parties are very tempted to replace a leader. So persistent poor performance, or a perception of poor performance, is, you know, can be enough for a leader to be destabilised. So I think that's one of the factors. I mean, some people would point to the, you know, increasing scrutiny with 24/7 media. They'd point to perhaps the role of social media in providing a particularly kind of hothouse environment. So it's clear there have been changes in recent years that have perhaps made for greater instability. But there are also, I think, some quite, as I said, deep structural peculiarities of the Australian system. It is interesting, for instance, that after Kevin Rudd came back to the Prime Ministership for his second run back in 2013, he managed to get through the party some rule changes that actually make it very difficult now for a Labor Party leader to be replaced between elections. And indeed, a system of rank-and-file membership voting was introduced. And it's striking that Bill Shorten has now survived about 5 years as Labor Party leader, despite occasional rumblings from rivals and rumblings about his performance from time to time. Those rule changes 5 years ago seem to have provided a degree of stability that's missing in the case of the Liberal Party.
Comparing to previous leadership challenges, are there differences or are they basically the same?
Each sort of has its own, I guess, dynamics and peculiarities. A common pattern, I think, has been for an initial unsuccessful tilt at the leadership by an individual, but they get close enough, or even when they don't get that close, that is such a destabilising act that a second attempt down the road, usually some months later, is successful. And that's happened on a number of occasions. It happened when Paul Keating, for instance, eventually overcame Bob Hawke in 1991. I mean, he'd had an initial unsuccessful tilt in mid-1991 and then was successful by 5 votes at the end of 1991. Incidentally, exactly the same margin as we've seen Scott Morrison beat Peter Dutton in the last few days. So, yeah, there have been some patterns that have recurred, but they each have their own dynamic. I mean, this one was a particularly messy one, I think, not least because of the state of the House of Representatives, the lower house itself, where the parties are very finely balanced. The government is a majority government, but only just, and there were a couple of parliamentary votes on the floor of the House last week where the margins were very close indeed. One vote in one instance, and indeed the government's successful attempt to actually adjourn the parliament a couple of weeks only passed by 2 votes. So I think that's given a particular complexion to this challenge, or it's one of the factors that have made this one perhaps, I think, a much messier one. But there are also a number of other issues that have come into play this time round. I mean, I think this particular battle of the last few days has been perceived by some of those involved at least as a kind of battle for the soul of the Liberal Party. So there's at least a perception that they're kind of philosophical differences that are actually being fought out here. Whereas I don't think that was the case with the Rudd-Gillard rivalry within the Labor Party. That was much more about personality and power. Those things are clearly operating here, but I think there is also a sense that of philosophical difference, and obviously a lot of the destabilisation of Turnbull's leadership came from the right of the party, who see him as not one of them, who see him as too far left, as pursuing policies and having a temperament, if you like, that's more in tune with the Labor Party than the Liberal Party.
The French, for instance, love the cock.
You're tuned into The Wire.
That was Justin speaking to Peter Chin, Gillian Sanders and Jill Shepherd, and Frank Bongiorno. That was great.
Yeah, and we just got some updates overnight because Malcolm Turnbull has said he will resign from Parliament this week, and that means the ruling coalition between Liberal and National are 1 seat short of a majority in the lower house. Then what does that mean? It means Scott Morrison needs support from crossbenchers to survive until his seat in East Sydney is filled. And that,
do you think he'll get that support?
It depends, because a lot of speculation before the leadership challenges are pointing towards Peter Dutton becoming the Prime Minister, and quite a lot of crossbenchers are not really on Peter Dutton's conservative side.
But regardless of who it is, I'm sure they would be a bit sick of all the changes by this point.
Yeah, it'll probably be that. So if the coalition can't get the crossbenchers to protect them throughout until, I reckon, October,
okay,
for the by-election, they will be very vulnerable. And if especially Bill Shorten's Labour Party is gaining on the momentum in the polls, and they can like fling a confidence of no motion anytime. But yeah, the last thing I just want to talk about is last week we saw the real brutality of politics, because only like 2 days before Malcolm Turnbull is thrown out, Scott Morrison at a press conference actually put his arm around Malcolm Turnbull and said, and I quote, "This is my leader and I'm ambitious for him." And 2 days later, Turnbull is out, Morrison is in.
It's volatile.
Very volatile. And yeah, and I just really hoped this can stop for a while.
Absolutely. Interesting.
What? Stay in the loop with the 95BFM Entertainment Guide. Online and on air 7 days a week, three times a day. 10:20 a.m., 3 p.m. and 6:20 p.m. It's gigs and that.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. It's 20 minutes past 12 on our fast fashion story. Someone's texted in to say that their friend has a label that makes bags, and you can find it at www.velvetheartbeat. So if you are more interested in looking into ethical sources for your fashion, it's a good idea. Justin, what have you got for us today?
Well, after a very messy week in Australian politics. Very crazy.
To the point that they're asking if they can come, if Jacinda can go over to Australia.
Yeah, I saw
that
on Twitter and just make my day. Back to the clip. Now, Malcolm Turnbull is being thrown out as Liberal Party leader and Prime Minister of Australia, and he's replaced by former Treasurer Scott Morrison. And what does that mean? And for that, I spoke to Dr. Peter Chen of the University of Sydney about what caused the leadership challenge and how it will affect Trans-Tasman relations. Then I'll speak to Dr. Jill Shepherd of the Australian National University to talk about how Scott Morrison's new government can affect refugee or climate change policies. And finally, I talked to Frank Bongiorno, also of the ANU, to talk about the last week's legacy on Australian political history. But first, I have asked Dr. Peter Chen to answer what the thing that's on our minds for the past week. What is going on?
Basically, the short story is that the ruling party, the Liberal Party of Australia, they have increasingly, over the last couple of decades, started to drift into two competing camps, really, around the more traditional liberals who are associated with classical liberalism and modern conservatism. That is kind of similar to what we see coming out of the United States. And so internally they have a great deal of difficulties basically working together. And that has turned into a number of personality conflicts. And those personality conflicts have led to poor governmental performance. And because of poor governmental performance, the government's been polling very poorly, and that has precipitated the leadership transition that's occurred.
Now, Scott Morrison is the Prime Minister of Australia. Do you think he will have different policies on New Zealanders in Australia?
There's a possibility that might change. I think a really open question. I think there will be some moderation of that policy, but if New Zealanders are hoping for a complete reversal of Australia's policies with regards to both New Zealand citizens who've been convicted of crimes in Australia and their detention and deportation, but also the standing of New Zealand citizens in Australia with regards to, say, welfare and access to permanent residency and citizenship, I think it's unlikely there will be substantial changes. Those policies have a really long history in Australia, going back some decades now. And unfortunately for New Zealanders, that while there's actually a large number of New Zealanders living in Australia, they're an extremely large cultural group in Australia. Australians actually pay no attention at all to what goes on in New Zealand, nor really cares about New Zealand politics or the concerns of the New Zealand government. And to give you an illustration of that, 29%, almost a third of Australians, can't actually name New Zealand when asked to list countries in the region.
What are your thoughts on the Trans-Tasman relationship under Morrison?
Well, I think it's likely to continue relatively unchanged. The Trans-Tasman relationship is quite robust, it's strong, it's institutionalised in many ways. So if you think about all those Trans-Tasman governing institutions like standard-making body and various trade organisations and things like that, they are really tied into the kind of heart of the structure of the diplomatic relations between the two countries. Those things aren't going to change. And changes in Australian government and leadership don't substantially influence the Trans-Tasman relationship in many ways. Sometimes there are stronger and weaker relationships between the two countries. So, for example, John Key and Malcolm Turnbull had quite a close relationship. And that's partly because they were basically the same person, you know, sort of rich businessmen, white dudes kind of thing, like to wear a lot of suits. But that was sort of maybe a slightly higher watermark than the average relationship. And generally speaking, Australia and New Zealand see the world in similar ways. They have relatively highly integrated economies that are facilitated by a large set of standing governance arrangements. And the areas of disputation tend to be about the treatment of expatriate New Zealanders in Australia. And that really hasn't substantially changed in 20 years.
When Scott Morrison is immigration minister, he has a quite strong policy on immigration. Do you think under his administration, will this change for the good or the other way?
Yeah, look, I think Scott Morrison as Prime Minister probably won't be looking to change too much at the moment. So currently Australia has quite strict border control and immigration policies. I don't think there's any sign of that changing under the new leadership of the Australian government. What I think is interesting though about Scott Morrison is that even though he has been incredibly tough on immigration, particularly on asylum seekers who arrive by boat, he hasn't made that central to his political persona. So in a way, like someone like Peter Dutton talked a lot about how tough and strict he was on immigration, Scott Morrison sort of did it more quietly. So we might see a little bit of tinkering around the edge, but for the most part, I don't think much will change.
What about on climate change?
Scott Morrison will be more conservative than the previous Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, on issues like climate change. But what we saw and what was so important in bringing down Malcolm Turnbull's Prime Ministership is the majority of the current Liberal Party, even those on the backbench, don't think that we need to act on climate change, and so whoever is Prime Minister is going to be hamstrung by that majority opinion. So I don't think either way, even if Scott Morrison was particularly progressive on climate change, that we would see any difference there.
But will that have any effect on Australia's place in the Paris Climate Change Agreement?
Yeah, look, it wouldn't surprise me if Scott Morrison did move to withdraw Australia from the Paris Agreement on climate change. I think that is majority position of his parliamentary colleagues in the Liberal Party, and also Scott Morrison has been an unabashed supporter of the coal industry in Australia. And so what we're seeing from the Liberal Party at the moment, really interestingly, is not just people questioning, I guess, climate change science, but being really proactively supportive of the coal industry. And that's probably where the government will head under Scott Morrison, even further in favour of supporting coal-fired power stations.
What does this mean for Australian politics in the future?
Hopefully we'll see an end to this relatively constant turnover of prime ministers in Australia. The important thing to remember about the Australian political system is that underlying all of this personnel turnover, that we're really quite stable. There's relatively high rates of trust and satisfaction in Australian politics. These are on fairly rapid decline, but still, as we go internationally, Australia's political system is incredibly stable. So hopefully we'll put an end to this, but that remains to be seen. I think given how unpopular this particular leadership change is likely to be with the Australian people, and we've already seen opinion polls out this morning that suggest Australian voters are incredibly unhappy with the Liberal Party for doing this. Hopefully both major parties in future will see that this kind of behaviour is not without negative consequence, that voters will punish them. I also think what we'll see at the next election is the minor parties getting record high vote share. I think Australian voters are increasingly turned off both major parties. With our preferential voting system, votes tend to go back to the major parties anyway, so we probably won't see seats really change. Both of the major parties remain in pretty tight control of the government generally, but I think more people will give their first preference vote to minor party and independent candidates, and eventually the major parties are going to have to listen to that and probably fix their behaviour.
Why does this frequency exist in Australian politics?
there are a lot of theories about why it's happened. I think in the Australian case, the almost complete sovereignty of the parliamentary party, its capacity to make and break leaders, is a very powerful phenomenon. I mean, in most Anglo-democracies now, I think, party leaders, there are rules that to some extent insulate them from that kind of sort of internal parliamentary party overthrow, usually some form of rank and file selection, which Canada, for some parties, or at least one of the political parties, goes all the way back to the First World War. This isn't the case in Australia, and it means that when things turn bad, or there's a perception that things are going bad for a political leader, usually via opinion polling, which in itself has become much more frequent over the last 20 or 25 years, parliamentary parties are very tempted to replace a leader. So persistent poor performance, or a perception of poor performance, is, you know, can be enough for a leader to be destabilised. So I think that's one of the factors. I mean, some people would point to the, you know, increasing scrutiny with 24/7 media. They'd point to perhaps the role of social media in providing a particularly a kind of hothouse environment. So it's clear there have been changes in recent years that have perhaps made for greater instability. But there are also, I think, some quite, as I said, deep structural peculiarities of the Australian system. It is interesting, for instance, that after Kevin Rudd came back to the Prime Ministership for his second run back in 2013, he managed to get through the party some rule changes that actually make it very difficult now for a Labor Party leader to be replaced between elections. And indeed, a system of rank and file membership voting was introduced. And it's striking that Bill Shorten has now survived about 5 years as Labor Party leader, despite occasional rumblings from rivals and rumblings about his performance from time to time. Those rule changes 5 years ago seem to have provided a degree of stability that's missing in the case of the Liberal Party.
Comparing to previous leadership challenges, are there differences, or are they basically the same?
Each sort of has its own, I guess, dynamics and peculiarities. A common pattern, I think, has been for an initial unsuccessful tilt at leadership by an individual, but they get close enough, or even when they don't get that close, that is such a destabilising act that a second attempt down the road, usually some months later, is successful. And that's happened on a number of occasions. It happened when Paul Keating, for instance, eventually overcame Bob Hawke in 1991. I mean, he'd had an initial unsuccessful tilt in mid-1991 and then was successful by 5 votes at the end of 1991. Incidentally, exactly the same margin as we've seen Scott Morrison beat Peter Dutton in the last few days. So, yeah, there have been some patterns that have recurred, but they each have their own dynamic. I mean, this one was a particularly messy one, I think, not least because of the state of the House of Representatives, the lower house itself, where the parties are very finely balanced. The government is a majority government, but only just. And there were a couple of parliamentary votes on the floor of the House last week where the margins were very close indeed. One vote in one instance, and indeed the government's successful attempt to actually adjourn the parliament a couple of weeks only passed by 2 votes. So I think that's given a particular complexion to this challenge, or it's one of the factors that have made this one perhaps, I think, a much messier one. But there are also a number of other issues that have come into play this time round. I mean, I think this particular battle of the last few days has been perceived by some of those involved, at least, as a kind of battle for the soul of the Liberal Party. So there's at least a perception that they're kind of philosophical differences that are actually being fought out here. Whereas I don't think that was the case with the Rudd-Gillard rivalry within the Labor Party. That was much more about personality and power. Those things are clearly operating here, but I think there is also a sense that of philosophical difference, and obviously a lot of the destabilisation of Turnbull's leadership came from the right of the party, who see him as not one of them, who see him as too far left, as pursuing policies and having a temperament, if you like, that's more in tune with the Labour Party than the Liberal Party.
The French, for instance, love the cock.
You're tuned into The Wire.
That was Justin speaking to Peter Chin, Gillian Sanders and, oh, Jill Shepherd, sorry, and Frank Bongiorno. That was great.
Yeah, and we just got some updates overnight because Malcolm Turnbull has said he will resign from Parliament this week, and that means the ruling coalition between Liberal and National are one seat short of a majority in the lower house. Then what does that mean? It means Scott Morrison needs support from crossbenchers to survive until his seat in East Sydney is filled. And that,
do you think he'll get that support?
It depends, because because I have lots of speculation before the leadership challenges are pointing towards Peter Dutton becoming the Prime Minister, and quite a lot of crossbenchers are not really on Peter Dutton's conservative side.
But also, like, regardless of who it is, I'm sure they would be a bit sick of all the changes by this point.
Yeah, it'd probably be that. So if the government, if the coalition can't get the crossbenchers to protect them throughout until, I reckon, October for the by-election, they will be very vulnerable. And if especially Bill Shorten's Labour Party is gaining on the momentum in the polls, and they can, like, fling a confidence of no motion anytime. But yeah, the last thing I just want to talk about is last week we saw the real brutality of politics, because only like 2 days before Malcolm Turnbull is thrown out, Scott Morrison at a press conference actually put his arm around Malcolm Turnbull and said, and I quote, "This is my leader and I'm ambitious for him." And 2 days later, Turnbull is out, Morrison is in.
It's volatile.
Very volatile. And yeah, and I just really hoped this can stop for a while.
Absolutely. Interesting.